seems like most families have their certain traditions when it comes to Thanksgiving. And a lot of them are similar. A lot of them are different. Something that you'll see in a lot of houses are is a TV that has to have football on all day. Something that you might also see, you may fall into the my tradition, you have to, when you get ready to eat, you know, loosen up the belt and undo the top button. Some of us, again, I fall into this category. You have the tradition of eating until you make yourself sick. Maybe you've integrated a yearly annual trip to the hospital with your Thanksgiving traditions. But one common tradition we should all have around this time of year is giving thanks and being thankful. A tradition that I've heard of, I've not participated in this, but it's an interesting one to think about, is there are some people that will, before they eat, say what they're thankful for. Initially, this seems really hard for me. It's easy to imagine getting into a situation where everybody's saying what they're thankful for, and then you get to, you know, little Joey at the end of the table, and he just keeps listing and listing, and you have this beautiful turkey in front of you, and you're just like, all right, I'm ready to eat, I'm ready to eat. It's easy for me to see that, but the important thing to remember is the thanks is the most important part, not the feast. It's hard for me to remember that. But why would we not be thankful? Why would anybody not be thankful when there's cause to be? This morning's text, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 40, and at the very end of it, in verse 23, we read about a cupbearer who should have been very thankful for a man named Joseph. But we read here in verse 23, in a situation where the cupbearer, again, should have been thankful, yet the cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So this morning what we're going to take a look at is thanks. Why should this cupbearer have been thankful to Joseph in the first place? Who really deserves all the thanks, and why it's so hard to be thankful? So if you haven't already, please turn over to Genesis chapter 40. I'm actually going to begin in chapter 39, and while you're flipping back a page, I will say thank you so much for being here. I pray that you had a good Thanksgiving, and that it was a blessing to spend time with your family. It is a blessing for me to spend time with you today, so thank you so much for being here to worship our God together. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 39, and we are going to begin reading in verse 21. If you remember, we have just had the exchange between Joseph and Potiphar's wife, in which Potiphar unjustly or on no basis throws Joseph into jail. But it says in verse 21, "But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper." Chapter 40, "Then it came about after these things that the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious at his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, so he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail in the same place where Joseph was in prison. And the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in jail, they both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. And he asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, 'Why are your faces so sad today?' And they said to him, 'We have had a dream, and there is no one to interpret it.' Then Jesus said to them, 'Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please.' So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, 'In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me. And on the vine there were three branches. And as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes, and I squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, I also saw in my dream, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head, and in the top basket there were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. Then Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh off you. Thus it came about on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among the servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. And we see in the next verse that it is 2 full years before Joseph is remembered again. So, as I was thinking about this, a question that became a little bit more of an interesting question than I guess I originally expected it to is, why would the cupbearer be thankful to Joseph in the first place? Joseph is in prison with them. He's not Chief Joseph. He's not Vizier Joseph like he's going to be in the future. He did not release the cupbearer out of prison. He did not have any bearing on the outcome of the cupbearer or the baker. He says himself and gives credit to God. God is the one who interprets the dreams. He did not conjure up these prophetic dreams and stick them into these two men's heads. So why would the cupbearer be thankful to Joseph in the first place? Well, I think the easy thing to see is, first of all, he was able to facilitate an answer to a problem that both of these men had. Both of these men had a dream that they had to have the answer to. They had to have an interpretation of it. It really bugged them to the point that in verse 6 we read that they were dejected. They were saddened that they could not figure out what this dream meant. And I find this such an interesting point of the Old Testament. There are many times where people have dreams that they just feel like they have to know the answer to. And I find it so interesting because I will have a dream that a banana is peeling me, but I don't really stop to think much of it. And yet, in the Old Testament, we see that there are dreams where they cannot move on without needing to know what the answer to it is. And it's when we see this, we always see that it's one of God's servants that steps into the gap and provides the interpretation, which really, in the end, makes me think that God is behind it, that he instills some desire to need to know what it means, because he needs you to know what it means. And I understand this, while I don't understand needing to know what a dream means, I understand this needing of completion. These men had this puzzle in their head that they had to have solved, and it was hard for them to move on until that. And I understand that. My Walker, our oldest child, is very particular, where he needs to have everything in order. He needs to have everything complete, everything just so. And I'm going to say this, and I don't think that I'm insulting anybody. I think he gets that from his mom's side of the family. And the members of the mom's side of the family that do this know that they do this. I'm not insulting anybody. But he gets a little bit of that from his papa, and it just depends on what it is. Typically, I am not that way. If you were to go into this office any day of the week, chances are it's probably a mess with books thrown all over the place. And it is what it is. But there is when you walk into our home, there's a bookshelf. And on these bookshelves, I have arranged all of the books very neatly. I do not mind, and we do let them, I do not mind if the kids play with the books. We let them. That's fine. But part of my evening routine is, every night, I put all the books back in order. I do this every night, and I have to make sure that they all go in the right place, in their specific place. Where this becomes a problem is every once in a while, I get to the end, and I realize we're missing books. And that drives me crazy. There's a specific chapter book set in which there are 28 books, and I will get to the end and be missing one. And I will do anything to find this book. It reminds me of the lady who lost her coins. And she will do anything to find it. I will stoop to even going into our children's rooms while they are asleep and wake them up in order to find these missing books. So I very much understand this needing of completion, needing to have the answer, needing for there to be a solution to this problem. And Joseph, who could have ignored all of this, didn't. He jumped in, and he was willing to help and willing to seek God's help for giving an interpretation. And through all of this, he was able to give them an answer. He was able to complete that problem for them. I would be so grateful if somebody came into our house at 9:30 at night and helped me to find a book that I have been missing for an hour. I would be so thankful. I would kill the fatted calf for you. If you brought your own fatted calf, I would do that. So I understand this. Of course, looking at this, I think, yeah, cupbearer should have been thankful to Joseph. He really should have been thankful for Joseph just for taking the time to try to help them solve their problem and doing that. But there's another reason they should have been thankful to Joseph, and really I think it's the most important reason. I want to remind you again about Joseph's position over these prisoners. When we jump back into chapter 39, we see in verse 22 that the chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for that. And we see that these prisoners, the cupbearer and the baker, fall under that charge. In verse 4, it shows that that Joseph was in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. And I want you to stop and think for a moment. Think about Joseph in charge and taking care of these prisoners. How do you think Joseph took care of them? Do you think it was pretty well? I think, thinking back to who Joseph is and the character that we've seen in him, I would think that he would be pretty righteous in his dealing with these two men. Well, I think this seems to be a correct assumption based on what we read in verse 4 when it says, the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them. This Hebrew word that in the New American Standard is he took care of them. In other translations, it's translated he ministered to them, he served them. We see this other times in the Bible talking about priestly ministering, but more importantly, and I think more telling of where Joseph is coming from, this is the same word that is used in the fourth verse of the previous chapter in verse 39, where Joseph goes into Potiphar's house, and it says, so Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. He served him, ministered to him. So I think about these men being thrown into prison, the baker and the cupbearer, how they have fallen into the darkest, I would imagine the darkest moments of their life, where they are now prisoners, they are now enemies of the Pharaoh. And in this, they meet someone who watches over them by the name of Joseph, who treats these men with the same service and ministering in which he gave the captain of the bodyguard. That is an amazing thing to read. And Joseph, he has so much care and compassion for these two men that he's able to look at these two men who are in prison and really, you know, I wouldn't think have much to be happy about. And he's able to tell that they are dejected, that something is wrong. And he inquires and seeks to help them in all of that. That's amazing. Why would Joseph do this? Well, I think that it one, speaks to Joseph's righteousness, of course. But I really don't think that it would be much of a jump to say that it's also indicative of Joseph's thanks. Because Joseph was in the same position. He was thrown into jail, although unjustly, he was thrown into jail. And someone showed him kindness. We read that in verse 21 of chapter 39. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him. And I have no doubt that Joseph understood that. That he understood that when he was in these darkest moments that God was showing kindness to him. And he was thankful for that. And that thankfulness overflowed into the actions that he gave to others, to the point that, again, he served and ministered these two prisoners like he would the chief of the bodyguards. He was going to give back this kindness that God gave him because he was thankful. That's the kind of righteousness that we should desire. That's the kind of thankfulness that we should desire. And I don't have any problem saying that the cupbearer, when he left this prison, because of, again, the mercy and the kindness that he was shown in his darkest days, should have been thankful for Joseph, extremely thankful, at least thankful enough to just do what he asked him to do, the favor that he asked him to do. And maybe he was. Maybe, I guess I don't want to say that the cupbearer wasn't thankful. Something that I can imagine very clearly, and the text doesn't say this, but I guess in my mind's eye, it's easy to picture it. It's easy to picture the cupbearer coming out of this situation and being thankful to Pharaoh, dropping to the Pharaoh's feet. Pharaoh is the one who has released him. He's the one who has put him back into the position in which he formerly held. I can imagine him being very thankful to the Pharaoh, and I have no problem with that. Of course, he should have been thankful to the Pharaoh. Thank you for releasing me. The hard thing, and the thing that is difficult to think about, is not giving thanks to Joseph. Really, my point in pointing all this out is that we have to be active thanksgivers. We need to reflect on our life and then the way that people have blessed us and the way, ultimately, how God has blessed us. And we need to be able to give that thanks to all who deserve it. When we are firing out these arrows of thanks, we need to make sure that they don't miss who really deserves it most. It is easy to be in a situation where we look at this and say, well, why should he be thankful to Joseph? Again, it was the Pharaoh that released him. Well, really, someone who shows that much compassion and mercy in someone's darkest hour deserves as much, or really more, thanks than just the Pharaoh who decides it's time to let you go. Really, not saying that Pharaoh doesn't deserve thanks, but don't miss giving thanks to where it belongs. Now, this is important for us to think about. Don't miss giving thanks to where it belongs. Where does our thanks belong? The cupbearer didn't thank Joseph by doing what was asked for him. That was a mistake, looking at it. But something that the cupbearer may have been ignorant to, but we definitely are not, looking at this story, is who really deserves the thanks in all of this. Again, we read in verse 8 that it is God who is the one who interprets the dream. We look at Joseph and his righteousness, and a lot of that comes from God because of who his God is. This whole situation where the cupbearer is released and eventually Joseph is also released because he finally remembers plays in way too nicely into God's will of putting Joseph into the position that he does to make me think that this was not God's intent all along. And really, in the end, I can't imagine that people have these kind of prophetic dreams that actually foretell the future without God being behind it. When I look at the cupbearer, the position that he was in, the freedom that he experienced, the being back in his position with the Pharaoh, it screams to me a blessing of a good God. Thanks is great for Pharaoh. Thank you for releasing me. Thanks is important for Joseph. It really is. But who really deserves the thanks is always God. Always. It is not, we need to be thankful. I need to be a thankful person to where everybody who deserves the thanks gets it. But it seems like far too often it's God that gets left out in the equation. It's easy and it's great to be, you know, to be thankful for maybe a surgeon who has gotten us through a surgery. It is important to be thankful and good to be thankful for friends who comfort us, for people like Joseph who comfort us in those dark times. It is important to be thankful to people who give their time or any other gift that they can give of. We should be thankful for these things. It would be wrong for us not to be. But we also have to realize that in everything, in every situation, God is the giver of every good and perfect gift. In everything, every situation, with every breath, no matter what anybody does, all the time, God deserves thanks. We can always find reason to give God thanks for everything. And this thanks, this overwhelming thanks, should erupt into action. Because really, that's what it amounts to. It's not about what we say. It's about what we do, how we show that. We could say that Joseph seems to be extremely thankful to God because of the way that he conducted himself. And we can also look at the cupbearer and say, you know, I don't really think that he was all that thankful because he didn't even do the favor that it was asked for him. Thanks should evoke change. And it does, and it was very easy for me to think of an example of this. Whenever, think of a waiter or a waitress that bends over backwards for you. What if you were to eat in a restaurant and waitress brings out a plate of chicken, and like, I ordered steak, no problem. I will go back there myself. I will throw on a chef's hat and I will cook that steak for you. In fact, I will throw on, if you don't, there's a reason why she's a waitress, so maybe you don't want that. But in fact, I will throw on an extra, I will pay for you an extra steak. In fact, I will include sides with that. In fact, I will pay for your whole meal. I'm so sorry for the mistake that I made. What if that was to happen? What kind of reaction would you have to that? I think about me. I would probably tell about this waiter or waitress for the next year to like everybody that I met. Every conversation that I would have would eventually come back to, you won't believe what this waiter or waitress did for me. I would be telling my family about this. I would be telling my friends about this. That would make me think about the way that I conduct myself as a person. That maybe I need to change my life. In fact, I would be up here using this as an illustration. I would be using it as a sermon illustration. Thanks, a true thanks does change our lives. But I want you to think about this, my brothers and sisters. Jesus Christ died for our sins. He died to take sin away. That is a story worth telling. That is a story worth talking the rest of your life about. That is a story worth a changed life. That is amazing. And our thankfulness should erupt into our actions. We shouldn't just be thankful every once in a while. We should live a life of thanks. Really, that's what's described for us in Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 18. Paul says, "And do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord, always, always giving thanks for all things. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, to God, even to the Father, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ." Thankfulness is not something that should be every once in a while, or even just on a holiday. Imagine what a life would look like if it was thankful always for all things. A life of thanks. Of course, there would not be opportunities that would pass in which we look back on, it's like, yeah, I should have been thankful. Of course that wouldn't happen. We are devoted to giving thanks. We would not walk away from an opportunity to give gratitude for 2 years and never think about it again. When I was younger and playing football, we had optional summer workouts, which for me meant that I would go for the first 2 weeks and then I wouldn't. And where this became a problem, my work ethic when I was younger was not good. And I will tell you this on many occasions. It wasn't. But whenever I came back to two-a-days, I was not in what you would call football shape. In fact, I would get sick a lot. If I come to a point where I should be thankful, if I come to a holiday like Thanksgiving, and I look up and I was like, man, I should have been more thankful to God. I really wasn't all that thankful today. It's not so much that we just miss being thankful for one day. It's because I didn't spend very much time the last 364 days of the year being all that thankful. If I was, it wouldn't be that hard to be thankful. There are obstacles to having life, a life of thanks, a life of gratitude. One of those things is life, this life. I imagine we read in chapter 40 in verse 20 that it came about on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the heads of these two men. I imagine the cupbearer being released on Pharaoh's birthday, and immediately he's the cupbearer for the Pharaoh on his birthday. That's a lot of busyness. It would be hard to, once you get out of that situation, to stop and to remember to be thankful. It's hard for us to stop and to remember to be thankful when we have all of this craziness going on in our lives, all these Pharaoh parties going on in our lives. It's hard to stop. And I think about the soil with the thorns in it. When the word is sowed in it and it chokes out the word from being fruitful. That's how I imagine so many times my life is. Why am I not thankful? Well, I have just so much stuff choking it out to the point where, you know, if I don't work on being more thankful, I'm just going to be worthless. I'm not going to produce any fruit of thanks. What I love so much about this congregation and about you is that you, because I know you, you are not worthless plants. You are not non-fruit-bearing people. You are a people that would not leave a soul in jail for 2 years just because you're too busy to stop and be thankful or grateful. You are not a people who would let such a good, amazing, loving God go without thanks. Because you know that He's worth it. You understand that. We have a whole book attesting to that fact. We have the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ attesting to that fact. That God is worthy of every single bit of praise and thanks that our bodies could ever muster. You know who would have really been thankful in all of this? I think the baker would have been pretty thankful. if he spent 3 days thinking about how his life was about to be taken from him. 3 days, probably not getting any sleep, waiting for death to come. What if on that third day he was pardoned? What if he was given life? Do you think that he would have struggled to be thankful? Do you think he'd have trouble forgetting to be thankful? Would he have trouble with the busyness of his life clouding his ability to stop and be thankful? I honestly don't know, but I'd imagine that it would probably be pretty hard to contain the thanks that he would have. The person who has the largest debt against them, like death, canceled, will be thankful and will love more. This is what Jesus says in the parable in Luke chapter 7, starting verse 41. A moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they were unable to repay, he graciously forgave them both. So which of them will love him more? And Simon answered and said, I suppose the one who he forgave more. And he said to him, you have judged correctly. We need to read this and to realize and to read this account of these two men and realize that we were in the position of the baker. We were as good as dead. We were just waiting and waiting for our time to come. But in this span of 3 days, when Jesus was buried, when he was resurrected, there became a choice. Just like we have presented before us two men, one representing life, one representing death, God gives us a choice through the death of Jesus. Life, death. And for us who have accepted life, who have had our debts canceled, who can walk in a new life, why would we not be thankful? And of those who haven't chosen life, the opportunity still awaits you. If you have not, why not? Feel free to come forward, be baptized, become a disciple of our good Lord Jesus Christ. While together we stand and as we sing.